Everyone has a lot of opportunities to connect with people in various ways. But also, you know, if things don't work out, if communication breaks down, that's okay as well. I think a lot of people really worry about change or loss, and that prevents them from opening up to their partner because they're worried that it will kind of shift their relationship in some way. But the reality is, like, if you don't talk about it, things are still going to happen. It's just that you might not be on the same page about it. And I think if people learn to let go of that and learn to embrace that, they'll be much more ready to be open and vulnerable and to kind of form more healthy attachments to others.
Hello and welcome to this Cheeks Talks episode, Opening Up Communication in Relationships with Leanne Yao, aka Polyphilia. Leanne is a polyamorous, sex-positive content creator, writer, educator, and advocate. She founded Polyphilia, the largest social media platform dedicated to non-monogamy education and awareness in Europe, addressing topics like race, neurodivergence, and being queer and polyamory. In this episode, we will talk about the importance of communication for any kind of ethical relationships and about our prejudices when it comes to non-monogamous relationships. Cheeks is a safe space for your sexual exploration. Become a better lover by attending workshops at the Cheeks Pleasure Academy and get inspired by ethically produced hot and steamy videos and audio stories. Try Cheeks 7 days for free using the promo code in the show notes of this episode. I'm Annelie, sensuality coach, pleasure activist, and Cheeks workshop host, and I'm very excited about my guest today. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really happy. I just told you before, I've just gotten out of an episode of your podcast, which I enjoy listening to a lot.
Thank you.
And before we get into the nitty-gritty parts of polyamory or non-monogamy, maybe we can start with the question, when and why did you start becoming an expert on polyamory?
Yeah, so I still find it funny that people kind of call me an expert, because I think it's such a broad term, right? And, you know, as far as a kind of how I define myself, I'm just a person who has been polyamorous for about 7 years now. And I talk about my experiences on the internet and people like what I have to share. But my journey really started towards the end of 2020. When I decided to start a blog. Some of my friends had been telling me to just post advice, some essays and kind of stuff like that online. Because, yeah, like I've always been like the mom friend in my own kind of friendship groups. Like I've always been the person that people turn to for advice on their relationships. And so someone was like, yeah, you should kind of write this stuff down on the internet. So I did. And slowly, you know, over time, it started getting a lot of traction. And here I am now. Now I do this full time. I gave up my career in law to pursue kind of polyamory education and entertainment full time. And I've got to say, it's a lot more fulfilling and a lot more fun. But I'm really passionate about advocating for everyone to have the choice to pursue the relationships that they desire. So not necessarily polyamory or non-monogamy, but just knowing that those options exist and that monogamy isn't the only path. And, you know, for monogamous people as well to consider practicing kind of more expansive versions of love and to recognize that romantic love is not the be-all end-all. There are other types of connection that are very valuable to your life as well. Yeah, and just kind of advocating for people to build community and to practice kind of an abundance mindset and all of that good stuff. So that's kind of my general mission statement, I guess. But mostly I just make silly videos on the internet and I do a number of things like I do workshops, I offer peer support, I sell merch, and yeah, that's me.
Thank you. I love that. Would you say, because you were talking about non-monogamy and polyamory, would you say this is the same thing? Or how do you define a non-monogamy and polyamory?
Sure, yeah. So polyamory and non-monogamy are not exactly the same thing. Polyamory is a type of non-monogamy, but there are other types of non-monogamy that are not polyamory. So broadly speaking, non-monogamy is just any relationship that isn't monogamous. So obviously, kind of we are assuming here that all the parties are consenting and know about it happening. Because if not, you know, either way, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous or whatever, it's cheating. And that's not kind of what is agreed upon. But yeah, basically a non-monogamous relationship is anything that involves more than two people and is not exclusive. And so under that, there's quite a wide umbrella of relationships that you can have. So polyamory is one of them. Polyamory is a relationship style where you can have multiple romantic partners and multiple sexual partners. But the main focus of polyamory is on love and connection and intimacy and romance. And it's the only type of non-monogamy that involves multiple romantic connections. So other types of non-monogamy, which include open relationships, swinging, just kind of monogamish type relationships. There's two people who are in a romantic relationship, but they can pursue sexual connections with others. So things can be kind of casual, one-offs. They might go to parties together. They might engage in threesomes occasionally, that kind of thing. But there's more kind of focus on sex for recreational purposes rather than kind of building close and intimate emotional connections. But it is a spectrum. Obviously, there are some people who have kind of casual connections, but they've been going on for a long time. And obviously, if you've been seeing the same people for a number of years, there is kind of emotional intimacy that has developed there, even if it's not necessarily kind of love that is traditionally defined. But yeah, broadly speaking, non-monogamy is an umbrella term for anything that isn't monogamous. Polyamory is one type of non-monogamous relationship, but there are other types of non-monogamy as well.
Yeah. And you were talking about cheating in any kind of relationship, really. So the term that is often used, I think, is also ethical relationships, just having any kind of ethical relationships, whether they are non-monogamous or monogamous. Does ethical simply mean that you agree on certain things and things happen consensually, or is there more to it?
I think this has to depend on the person you ask, because yeah, you're right. Ethics does encompass quite a large range of things. And also, people have different ethics. People don't have the same definitions of what is considered ethical. I personally just say non-monogamy when I'm referring to kind of open relationships in general, but a lot of people say ethical non-monogamy or consensual non-monogamy. Consensual non-monogamy is kind of more commonly used in like academic research to distinguish from infidelity and cheating. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, I think it probably makes more sense to just move away from those labels like altogether, because I mean, we don't say ethical monogamy, and it's just kind of presumed that monogamy is inherently ethical, and the qualifier of like ethical or consensual non-monogamy sort of implies that, like, without those labels, that non-monogamy is inherently wrong, or that the party's not consenting in some way, or that, yeah, it's just not normal, or that it's bad. That's kind of my broad take on it. But as to kind of ethics in relationships generally, like, yeah, obviously I think consent is a big part of it. I think that it's important to negotiate kind of, you know, what your boundaries and your agreements are in the relationship and to honor them as best as you can. I also think that it's important to be flexible and keep an open mind and renegotiate if things aren't working, because people change over time. It's not like you just negotiate it at the start and then that's just the case like for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to be able to repair well from conflict. So conflict is inevitable. I think it happens. And obviously it's good to prevent conflict and to try your best not to hurt your partner, but it will probably happen. And I think in those scenarios, it's important to stay accountable and to communicate openly and to know how to apologize effectively and to, you know, take steps to, you know, be better. So I think I could go on about like all the different things you could do to ensure that your relationship is kind of healthy and sustainable. But I think these are important in all types of relationships, and which is why I think that the labels of kind of ethical and consensual kind of prefacing non-monogamy are probably going to quickly become obsolete.
Yeah, I agree. And also I had to experience and realize over the time of my life that all kinds of relationships that you have with either one person or several people, just because you say they're monogamous or non-monogamous or an open relationship or whatever term you want to use, doesn't necessarily mean that everyone knows what exactly that entails for your particular case. Mm-hmm. I felt for myself, generally just talking about my relationship or my relationships, and then if people want to know more, I can go into it, but it doesn't necessarily need to mm-hmm. be labeled, because every relationship will look differently anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
we all grew up like with the mindset of monogamous relationships, or a lot of us grew up with a mindset of having and being in monogamous relationships. So the idea of moving beyond that or past that or trying different ways of being in relationship is still really scary, I think, for a lot of people. And you host peer support workshops, and you give tips and lead open discussion groups, which I think is really amazing. And I'm curious as to what are like most frequently asked questions and topics in these settings.
Yeah. So I've been doing peer support for about 2 and a bit years now. And I think the main things that I get asked about are probably also the things that monogamous people are asking me about the most often, you know, in terms of the kind of the most common issues that would crop up. So the main thing is jealousy. I think that's like a big concern that people have, and probably the most challenging thing. Well, one of the most challenging things to navigate, like when moving from monogamous to open. I think another one is kind of conflicts within the relationship networks. So obviously, if there's more than two people involved, there's a lot more connections and therefore a lot more potential for conflict. So there can be situations where, you know, it's the same as like in large friend groups, right? Like someone miscommunicates, or like they interpret something someone said the wrong way and they tell another person, and then there's a misunderstanding. Or like two people get introduced to each other by someone that they both care about. They don't get along. What happens then? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, logistical things as well. So, you know, kind of time management or navigating the dating world, all kinds of things, really. Like, I think people find it very difficult to imagine a relationship involving kind of more than two people. But I think if you think of it as like a friend group, but like just a lot more intimate, well, I suppose intimate in a different way, then you can start to see how kind of a lot of the kind of same dynamics and kind of, you know, conflict patterns and things like that emerge. So I get asked about jealousy probably the most. I think, you know, like a lot of people think that jealousy has to be overcome, or that you can't, you know, you have to just, you know, stop feeling jealousy in order to be able to practice non-monogamy or polyamory. Mm. But then I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions about the relationship style, because jealousy is an emotion. And I think it can come from a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to dig down into the root of what's going on and to figure out whether it's, you know, kind of your own insecurities and kind of beliefs that are holding you back, or if it's something that your partner is doing that is triggering, or if it's something about your relationship that needs to be clarified. Mm-hmm. And usually from there, you can communicate better with your partner and kind of, you know, troubleshoot the issue. And I think getting good at polyamory is less about just learning not to feel this emotion, but more about knowing what to do, how to deal with it when it happens. And yeah, you know what I said about troubleshooting, just being able to understand kind of where it comes from, identify the issue, and kind of talk about it openly with your partner or partners. So yeah, so those are the main things that get discussed. But honestly, there have been a wide variety of other issues that have come up as well, you know, just like in all types of relationships. I'm currently in training to be a therapist, and I'm in the hope that in future I can work with kind of non-monogamous couples and polycules and groups and provide kind of poly-friendly therapy to them, because I really enjoy doing peer support. I really enjoy helping people. And there is a lack of mental health support for queer people, for polyamorous people, for people of color.
Yeah.
And as someone who occupies like all of those marginalizations, like I think it's really important that polyamorous people have support and community and people to talk about their problems and vent to and have a safe space to vocalize and process their feelings, you know, outside of the people that they're in relationships with.
Yeah. And also role models, like to just be able to talk to other people about it and to, yeah, and to maybe also have the possibility to see relationships where it actually works well. Mm-hmm. Because most of like my broader friend group who has tried some sort of open relating or polyamory has failed, if you want to call it that, and to have good examples and role models for, you know, how you want your relationship to look like and how it can look like, yeah, I think would be really amazing.
Yeah, like I think we don't have many examples. you know, online, in the media, whatever. Like, I mm-hmm. think it's gotten better. But for the most part, I think, you know, all we had were kind of love triangles where, you know, the main character ends up with mm-hmm. one of them at the end, or kind of cheating situations, or just, you know, or if you see a non-monogamous person on screen, they're often kind of portrayed as like indecisive, slutty, you know, which, you know, and obviously being slutty is not a bad thing, but, you know, that it doesn't, it, you know, that I think they're equated in a way that can be harmful. Well, when I first started kind of posting online about my experiences, there were a lot fewer people who were doing what I did. Now, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in the company of maybe kind of 20 to 30 other creators and, you know, who have emerged in the last like year or so. And they're all talking about different experiences and kind of sharing different aspects of their life, their struggles, things like that, which I think is really great. And I think we need more of that for sure.
Yeah. Also, because you were talking about jealousy being a big issue, and of course, being able to communicate your jealousy or maybe where it comes from and the root of it to your partner. Because communication is also something that we just assume everyone is able to do. And we also, like a lot of us also haven't learned how to communicate properly. And especially when it comes to relationships and love and topics that are kind of vulnerable. Mm. Are there any like models of communication that you can use? Or do you have tips for people that are like, yeah, but how do I even start talking about these things, like the difficult things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think obviously it can be very difficult to be vulnerable. You know, it's a very intimate thing to do, and you open yourself up to a lot of hurt. And also sometimes people also worry about upsetting their partner, disappointing them and hurting them in some way. And so there are kind of several potential barriers to kind of being, I suppose, radically honest with your partner on issues that are kind of really important in your relationship. And I think something that does crop up quite a lot is the issue of people pleasing. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're in a relationship with someone, particularly if you've been together for a very long time, there is the potential danger. I'm not saying this happens in all relationships, but sometimes you don't know where like you end and the other person begins. You kind of start kind of fusing into one person, and there is less of a sense of like yourself as an individual, kind of a sense of independence, things like that. And that can be dangerous if you have desires that are different from your partner's, but you don't know how to vocalize them to your partner because, you know, you're worried that this will cause a rift or that this difference will kind of push you apart. And I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, self-advocacy is probably kind of one of the most important skills to learn in relationships and also just, I think, in life. And if you're just kind of going along with whatever everyone else is doing and just, you know, doing things because that's what people expect of you or that's what other people want, you tend to lose sight of yourself as a person. And I think that's a big struggle for people, like when they, for example, have been monogamous for a very long time and they open up because they suddenly have independent desires. They might want different things out of their dating lives or sex lives. You know, they'll be like forging kind of individual connections with people. Like even if two people in a couple are dating the same person, they will still have like very unique relationships with this person. Mm-hmm. And that can be very scary because you don't want to upset your partner. You want to ensure that the relationship is protected, that you're happy and safe. But I think it's also about getting comfortable with the idea that you can't guarantee these things. So kind of what I said about the start about kind of practicing the abundance mindset is recognizing that everyone has lots of opportunities to connect with people in various ways. But also if things don't work out, if communication breaks down, that's okay as well. So I think a really important part of healthy communication is self-advocacy, like I said, but also accepting and embracing uncertainty, in a sense. I think a lot of people really worry about change or loss, and that prevents them from opening up to their partner because they're worried that it will kind of shift their relationship in some way. But the reality is, like, if you don't talk about it, things are still going to happen. It's just that you might not be on the same page about it, or you might both feel very isolated and thinking you're the only one with these problems. And I think if people learn to let go of that and learn to embrace that, you know, change is very normal and loss is a very normal part of life and things like that, they'll be much more ready to be open and vulnerable and to kind of form more healthy attachments to others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one. just let go of this and overcome this. I mean, of course, you didn't say it that way, but like the thought of it always seems so much easier than the actual doing of it.
Yeah, obviously it's easier said than done, and we all kind of carry the baggage of kind of what we've, you know, our upbringings and kind of societal beliefs and things like that, which is why it's hard, right? And I think that like people who move from monogamy to non-monogamy, like, you know, it really kind of creates a pressure for you to like learn and grow mm-hmm. at a faster rate than if you were monogamous. Like, can't remember who said this, but there was a book I read where someone described like the kind of transition as like a pressure cooker for personal growth. And it is, like, I do think it is.
Yeah.
So, because if you're relating to multiple people, you have to get very good at, you know, kind of recognizing like your insecurities and kind of how they impact kind of how you relate to people. Because if you don't, there's more people that you're affecting now.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences of that are much graver
mm-hmm.
Than if you were just connecting with one person.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you give to people who want to change from a monogamous relationship concept to a non-monogamous one?
So I think the first thing is that you're not just changing your relationship, you're building an entirely new one. So I think a lot of people kind of perceive it as, oh, we're adding more partners to our relationship, and sort of like, you know, they're kind of additions to this structure that's already there, and kind of what's already there doesn't have to change. But in reality, like, it is just like a completely different framework. Like, you are kind of getting rid of like what you had, you're building something new, and kind of how you like move in the world, like from that point onwards, is going to be completely different. So a lot of the habits that you might have developed in a monogamous relationship, a lot of the routines, a lot of the things that you do to kind of show your love and commitment to each other, like, have to be re-examined, right? So, you know, a very classic one is like, if you kind of previously believed that in order to demonstrate love to your partner, you had to deny desire for others, you had to, yeah, forsake all others, right? Like, you know, and the kind of whole foundation of your relationship is built on the fact that you're not seeing other people, right? Non-monogamy takes that away. You are admitting desires for other people, and you are pursuing connections and removing the exclusivity from your relationship. So, you know, how do you define your love and commitment to each other now? Well, now you have to start focusing on the actual connection rather than the structure of your relationship. How emotionally in touch are you with each other?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how good are you with communication and being honest and vulnerable with each other? And it's kind of, you know, these things that like actually define a relationship rather than, oh, well, I have a ring on my finger, so I know we love each other. Or, oh, we have a child, so therefore we love each other. You know, because, yeah, you can have all of these things and you mm-hmm. can still not be very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing is, yeah, like kind of, you know, recognizing that you are doing a hard thing. You are rebuilding something, and that, again, it's about embracing uncertainty. You're not knowing how you're going to come out the other side, because even if you were compatible before in a monogamous relationship, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be compatible in a non-monogamous relationship, because two people can want non-monogamy and want completely different things out of it. And those things can sometimes contradict each other. So I think kind of embracing that risk is a big part of it,
mm-hmm.
which is why, like, I think when things don't work out, sometimes I don't necessarily see it as a failure, because sometimes it's just about two people recognizing that they have different needs and they're not going to continue making each other miserable by staying together. And sometimes the most loving thing to do is to allow, you know, the person you love to be happy with someone else, because you recognize you can't give them the happiness that they seek.
Yeah.
Embracing that uncertainty and taking that risk, and ultimately recognizing that, like, the kind of happiness of the two of you as individuals hopefully can be sustained while you're in a relationship. But if that doesn't work out, you can kind of do the loving thing and let each other go as well. I think another thing is to you know, if jealousy happens, to be able to talk about it rather than pretend it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people really struggle with communicating their jealousy to their partner because they don't want to ruin their partner's good time. So for example, if your partner's just had a really lovely date and they come back and they're like, oh my God, I'm so excited, it went so well. You don't want to rain on their parade and be like, oh my God, I felt like shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously I think kind of timing and tact are important skills, but I think it's definitely important to bring it up at some point because yeah, the more you kind of suppress it, the bigger of an issue it's going to become later down the line. And also, you know, how can your partner support you if they don't know what's going on with you emotionally?
Yeah.
You know, and it might be even worse later if you tell them that actually you've just been having a horrible time the whole time.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, now I feel blindsided. Why didn't you tell me?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think being open about like having struggles with it is not a bad thing. And I think it can take time to learn to be comfortable with your partner being uncomfortable with you having a good time. But, it is a necessary part of the process to get to the other side. I think people are taught, you know, to, yeah, like obviously, you know, try your best to ensure your partner's happiness. And so if you open up and then you're seeing other people and that upsets your partner, it can feel like doing that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's about kind of sitting with that discomfort and supporting your partner through it rather than just being like, oh, this hurts you. Oh, let's stop everything immediately,
mm-hmm.
you know, because ultimately if both of you want to open up, but both of you want to move towards a non-monogamous relationship, then it's going to be a difficult transition for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do hard but rewarding things
mm-hmm.
all the time, right? Training for marathons, having a child, you know, to name just examples that come off the top of my head, you know, because people always ask me like, oh, well, if it's so hard, then why won't you just stop doing it?
Yeah.
Like, if it was so hard, then I thought you wanted this. So why are you struggling? But, you know, it's about the goals that I'm trying to reach. It's about like the place I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about kind of living according to my values. And so, yeah, you know, sometimes it's hard, but I think it's, you know, you see the bigger picture of kind of wanting expansive relationships, wanting kind of freedom of connection, whatever it is, kind of variety, excitement, novelty, and recognizing that it's not going to happen immediately, but you're taking steps to get there and it might be hard along the way, but ultimately the struggle is worth it.
Yeah. And there is, as you said before, there are so many different ways how this can look like as well. Like it doesn't, there mm-hmm. isn't just this one form of non-monogamy that has to be the path taken if you want to be in a non-monogamous relationship. And when I speak to people about this, I feel like a lot of people struggle also just with the idea that there's only one way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it really helped me, for example, to just take away any kind of label and just say it's a relationship and whatever it is in that moment
mm-hmm.
is good and helpful. I mean, all of the things that you just said and explained feel so good to hear.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I think it's really necessary to know all these things and to also just be kind to yourself and to your partner throughout this whole process, because it might not be easy along the way either.
Yeah.
There is a big fear about being alone, especially when you're old.
Mm.
And this is why having a partner, one romantic partner in a monogamous relationship, makes you feel maybe a little more secure or safer in the thought of not having to be alone when you're old.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of being in a polyamorous relationship can be scary because people are afraid that their partner might then be with another partner, or that you don't have like the support that you would want, the intimate connection that you would want when you're old. And maybe you're too old then to be able to sustain like a relationship with multiple people. Yeah. And I wanted to know your thoughts on that issue and the thought of being alone.
Yeah. I get a lot of hate sometimes on social media when kind of people are like, oh, well, kind of see how that works out in a couple of years, or like, oh, you're going to die alone of AIDS or whatever, you know. And, you know, I could definitely talk more about kind of general misconceptions and prejudice against kind of polyamorous people.
Mm.
But to address kind of your point, you know, I think it's a bit of a funny one, like this kind of concern about like being alone, because if you think about it, in monogamous relationships, it's not just about like being in a relationship with one person. But it's also about, in a sense, or as monogamy is traditionally defined, defending that one connection that you have and ensuring that there aren't any threats to your relationship, right? You know, I think things are changing a bit more now, but, you know, in movies, in TV shows, whatever, like, it's very encouraged for people to, you know, prevent their partners from having very close friends of, like, a different gender, for example, or for kind of jealousy to be played off as something that's, like, cute, or to kind of test your partner's loyalty in some way. Like, there's a lot of kind of protection and defense of this relationship that you have. And what that creates is isolation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great that you have this very wonderful intimate connection with this person. But if both of you don't have any intimate connections with other people, I don't mean intimate as in sexual or romantic. I just mean, like, literally just emotionally close, you know, kind of support networks and things like that. Then, you know, what happens if you and your partner break up? Because it might happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's this fiction that, like, oh yeah, you get into a relationship, you get married, you have kids, and then you're just together until you die. But the reality is, I mean, a lot of marriages end in divorce. And even if you end up kind of growing old together, one of you is going to die earlier than the other, probably. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think the fear of isolation is a very real thing, but we forget that there are ways to kind of prevent that that don't involve kind of, you know, romance necessarily, right? Like, you can have kind of very close support networks, you can have kind of family, you have, yeah, like, ample opportunities for connection. And I think a part of the ideology of polyamory, I suppose, is not so much like, yeah, you have to date and have sex with and fall in love with multiple people at once. I think it's more just about, like, recognizing that you can have lots of fluid connections with people, and recognizing the importance of intimacy in all types of relationships rather than just with, like, your one romantic partner. You know, so sure, like, you know, it's difficult to balance multiple connections, but I mean, it's in the same way as, like, kind of having, like, a very close friend group and a monogamous romantic partner. Mm-hmm. Like, you just juggle these things, and so you can spread your needs and kind of your expectations across multiple people, which is going to be a lot more sustainable than placing all of your hopes, fears, dreams, desires, etc. onto one person.
Yeah,
which might be very overwhelming. So, and polyamory has been done for a very long time. Like, I feel like it's being talked about more in the last, like, 1 or 2 years or so. But in reality, people have been doing various forms of non-monogamy for a long time.
Yeah.
And there's a book that came out quite recently where someone, like, basically interviewed a bunch of polyamorous people who are 65 and above. So, you know, a lot of people think that polyamory doesn't last, that you find a way to kind of settle down with one person eventually. But not the case. You know, people settle down in groups of 3 or 4 or, like, in large communities, and you don't have to be alone. And so I think in many ways, having one partner, one romantic partner to kind of rely on and feel secure is actually counterproductive sometimes. By kind of defending that one connection that you have and ensuring that they never leave, you end up isolating yourself a lot more and putting a lot of pressure on the connection that makes it all that more brittle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I go back to kind of my earlier point of the importance of community. And community doesn't have to necessarily be found through love or sex, but just, you know, through kind of vulnerability and mutual support and kind of just ensuring each other's mutual happiness. And that doesn't have to necessarily be a romantic or sexual relationship. All this is to say, you know, I think everyone deserves to have multiple connections, and whatever kind of form those connections take is going to have to be up to you. If you want one romantic and all the others are platonic, that's great. But I don't think we should be placing all of our expectations onto one person and isolating yourself from everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And also, I think the other extreme is to say that you're placing all of your expectations on yourself to fulfill all of your needs and desires yourself.
Yeah, great point.
Which is also unrealistic, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think we're becoming increasingly individualistic as a culture. So it's like, yeah, like, you don't owe anyone anything and you can do everything yourself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sure, like, it's great to be independent and feel like you don't need other people, but I think we're all very kind of social creatures at the end of the day. you know, and I think very few people are actual just genuine social hermits who don't need anyone and can be self-sustaining. And it's good and okay to rely on other people sometimes.
Yeah.
As long as they have the capacity, as long as you're not just relying on one person the whole time, spreading that among more people and letting them lean on you as well is a really great thing to do.
Yeah. You said on one of your posts on Instagram, I'm quoting, "I used to see monogamy and polyamory as opposite ends on the spectrum, but as time goes on, I'm starting to believe that in many ways, healthy, consciously chosen relationships end up looking very similar, whether they're monogamous or polyamorous." Could you elaborate on that a little?
Yeah, so I think kind of that speaks to like what I just said earlier about the importance of a community, you know, however that might look. And so kind of the point I was making about that was I'm hoping for people to move towards a more expansive version of monogamy where instead of just like viewing everyone as a potential threat to your relationship, and kind of being afraid of being too close to certain friends in case like your partner feels suspicious or jealous or whatever, to like embrace that, like you can have like very fulfilling connections with multiple people in whatever form that might take. And to, you know, kind of not isolate yourself in that sense. So, I mean, in that kind of particular post, like, I think that's probably kind of one of my most popular posts on Instagram because yeah, like, I think it resonates with people kind of, you know, beyond kind of my audience, which is, you know, mostly polyamorous and non-monogamous people, right? Yeah, so, you know, I think as long as people have, like, the freedom to be individuals, to recognize their own independence as well as kind of the way they, their interdependence, like, within the relationship, and they can pursue deep connections, whether it's friendships or kind of like sexual connections or romantic connections, like whatever, you know, you're still building community, you're still preventing yourself from isolation. So, you know, whatever way you do it, you probably won't die alone, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of what I meant by that post, you know, like I think that there's this pervasive idea that like your relationship has to be defended and protected. But in reality, like the only kind of actual threat to your relationship is the behavior of the people in it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you and your partner, say, are like in an exclusive monogamous romantic relationship, for example, like ultimately, if someone like tries to like tempt your partner away from you, like that can only happen if your partner actually wants to be with them or like makes the choice to cheat or whatever, right? Like, I think we like to blame the other person because we want to see the best in our partner and we don't like blaming our partners and kind of seeing the people we love as like people who have done wrong. But yeah, like, you know, in reality, like it takes two people to make a decision like that. And it's, you know, and we have to learn to kind of trust our partners and to, communicate through those things effectively.
Yeah. Thank you. It also feels when you said that this is one of the best performing posts on Instagram, it also feels like this post is a peace offered to the people that feel threatened by polyamory.
Yeah.
You know, monogamy is also, it's not all that bad if you think about it and choose it consciously.
Yeah, like I think kind of monogamy as it's traditionally defined, you know, the type of monogamy that was sold by the media is toxic. And I think people are waking up to that now, like how there are a lot of relationship tropes that are actually not healthy and not advisable to do in real life. You know, I think The Notebook is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's like literally like, you know, being like, go on a date with me while he's like hanging and threatening suicide, you know, like just like what? And people are like, oh my God, that's so romantic. So like, I'm hoping we can move away from that and recognize that like we can have monogamous relationships that don't involve all of that stuff. And ultimately I'm not saying that everyone needs to have like multiple romantic relationships because like let's be real, they can be really tiring. But you know, I am saying that like people should have the freedom to have kind of intimacy with multiple people in whatever way they choose.
Yeah, definitely. And also because you were just talking about one of the challenges, what would you say are the biggest challenges or maybe downsides to non-monogamous relationships?
I really struggle to see kind of many downsides to polyamory these days because I think the downsides that I do encounter are probably not unique to polyamory. I think they're just general struggles that you would have in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I suppose, like, one is just the stigma that is associated with polyamory and non-monogamy and just kind of alternative relationships in general. People kind of tell me things like, oh, you're going to die alone, or like, mm-hmm. you know, that your relationship's not going to last, your partners don't love you, blah, blah, blah. And I think that over time, I've learned to develop a thick skin and to not have to concern myself with what other people think and to just, you know, go my own way. But the people who are new to it and perhaps kind of, you know, haven't experienced kind of that level of stigma and prejudice in the past, that can be very emotionally difficult. And, you know, being in a non-monogamous relationship has statistically been proven to lead to negative mental health outcomes, like similar to other marginalized groups, right? Like if you're LGBT or if you're a person of color, or if you're disabled. So I think that can be hard. And I'm hoping that, you know, over time, people will open their minds up more to the number of relationship options on offer, and that polyamory will not be just kind of so heavily like judged as it is right now. And I'm very honored to be kind of part of that movement, I suppose, in like raising awareness and educating people on this relationship style. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think we're seeing some changes already kind of societally, legally, as well in parts of the world that are, I think, kind of making positive progress to eradicating this kind of one disadvantage that I can think of right now. But yeah, I think the main disadvantage is just the stigma. But, you know, I think it's just something that will hopefully be improved with time.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I think this is the perfect ending to this podcast. You've really summed it up so nicely. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on. It's been great speaking with you about this topic.